It's time once again for Nick Guy, Private Eye. When we left our heroes last time, they'd been hired by Ramen Spaghetto, a performer at the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House's production of 19th century American poets on ice.
I am in the role of Ralph Waldo Emerson. Rudolfo, my manservant, will show you the program to prove it.
But this is an audio drama, Master Spaghetto. The listeners cannot see the program.
Oh, I know that. You think I don't know that?
On opening night, the female lead of the production, Ostentatia Bland, sprained her ankle.
The blade came loose from one of my skates. I believe it was a case of sabotage.
Her role was assumed by an unknown talent named Christine Jornet.
And she's the conniving waif I'm convinced is the guilty saboteur.
And Miss Jornet became the talk of the ice opera world when she put on a flawless performance.
And it was that flawless performance that caused me to fall madly in love with her.
But what had the entire ice opera world stunned was that Miss Jornet had never skated before in her life. In fact, she wasn't working at the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House as a skater, but as the assistant to the assistant prop manager.
I can't explain it.
Mr. Raffaelli, the director of the show, called Miss Jornet a natural talent.
And I have learned not to question natural talent. Miss Jornet is always nervous just before she goes on, but once she hits the ice, her focus is that concentrated that she seems to be a completely different person, in a completely different place. It's eccentric, but it works.
But Christine Jornet's eccentric behavior is not limited to the ice. She has been seen roaming the halls of the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House in that same trance-like state, as if in search of something. And her searches are many times followed by unexplained accidents.
And I'm the one who always happens to be the victim of those unexplained accidents.
That's Mr. Peavy, the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House's equipment maintenance manager.
And I'm getting a little tired of having all these accidents happen to me.
Hoping to discover a little more about what's going on, Nick Guy
every
has...
Every time I have one of these quote-unquote accidents, I see this strange person wearing a black cape and a mask that looks like a skull.
Oh, yes. And so, hoping to discover a little more about...
And another thing! He has these beady little red eyes.
Oh, yes, the beady little red eyes.
Don't get me started on that smell!
Oh, yes, the smell.
That fella smells like he hasn't taken a bath in months!
Yes, the smell. Is that all?
Is that all? How much more do you want me to tell?
Oh, well, anyway, hoping to discover a little more about what's going on, Nick Guy has set up a meeting with Loose Lips Louie, his favorite informant. He met Louie at his favorite hangout, the short diner with the long menu. We pick up the action now as we hear Nick Guy speak.
Well, for some reason, someone has brought back the legend of the Phantom of the Ice Opera down at the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House. What can you tell us about this character and the stories surrounding him?
Well, the stories first started circulating around the mid-1800s. The Phantom of the Ice Opera was a man who was studying to be a lawyer, but after gambling away his inheritance, he took a job as a stagehand at the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House. Well, he lived in the basement there.
When we asked you about this last time, you mentioned that there was some sort of an underground river down there.
Yes, that's right. And there's also a room with mirrored walls.
Yes, we heard about that.
While he was working there, he is said to have become obsessed with a skater named Palais Garnier. But she rejected his advances, and when that happened, he really went off the rails.
What did he do?
He started roaming through the Ice Opera House, frightening people and causing accidents. He started dressing up in a black cape with a mask that looked like a skull, and he had beady little red eyes.
Did he smell, you know, like he never took a bath?
Well, not at first, but he got so occupied frightening people and causing accidents, I guess he forgot about his hygiene.
Guston Griminoff, the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House organist, keeps suggesting that the Phantom of the Ice Opera has returned. Well, he just might be up to something himself. What do you know about him?
Well, one thing I know is that he likes to gamble. You know, horse races and stuff.
And as far as his past goes, I know he used to work as the organist for the Barkham and Bailiff Circus.
Yes, he told us that. He worked there at the same time Christine Jornet worked as an assistant to Eric the Marvelous.
Oh, you mean Eric the Marvelous.
Yes, there was that typo that was never fixed. So why did Guston Griminoff leave the circus?
Well, that I don't know. One day he just up and left and got the job at the Ice Opera House when the previous organist quit suddenly. He started working there just after Christine Jornet did.
Well, thanks, Louis.
Well, hopefully this information has been useful for you.
Well, not on the face of it, but I'm certain there's something here that will unlock this whole mystery.
We returned to the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House and found Ramen Spaghetto attempting to court Christine Jornet. Actually, he was courting her through his manservant, Rudolfo.
Tell her that I am a wealthy young man with a good pedigree and many outstanding characteristics.
Oh, yes, sir. Master Spaghetto is a wealthy young man with a good pedigree and many outstanding characteristics.
Oh, Ramen. I mean, Rudolfo, or whichever of you I'm actually talking to. Astley wretches don't mean much to me. What is of first importance to me is what the Apostle Paul wrote about in 1 Corinthians 15, 3 and 4. Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures.
Oh, you think I don't know that? You think that is not of first importance to me as well? Of course it is. Rudolfo, tell her of course it is.
I'm afraid I cannot do that, Master Spaghetto, because I fear that it is not of first importance to you, sir.
Oh, my dear, let us not allow a minor detail like that to be a stumbling block to a budding romance. This issue is mere folly anyway.
Oh, but Ramen, that's just what the first century Gentiles felt about the cross of Christ. They considered it a mere folly as well. And the preaching of Christ and him crucified was a stumbling block to the first century Jews. And it remains a mere folly and a stumbling block to many people today.
Help me out here, Rudolfo.
The best aid I can give you at this time, Master Spaghetto, is to point out that through the cross, condemnation ends.
And the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans 8:1, "There is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus."
Ah, yes. It is through the blood of Christ that we find the forgiveness of our trespasses.
Forgiveness of our trespasses?
Forgiveness of our trespasses, sir. Our sins. Our rebellion against God and his commands. Through the cross, we find redemption from those sins. As it is written in Ephesians chapter 1, "In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses, according to the riches of his grace, which he lavished upon us."
Well, when you put it that way, yes, I guess that is kind of important. Very well, Christine, I shall henceforth make all of what you just said of first importance to me. So, let us not quibble any longer of that minor detail. Oh, I love you, Christine, and I want to marry you. Say that you'll be mine, and we shall be... Christine, you have a rather strange look in your eye. Are you comprehending what I am saying to you?
Well, she appears to be focusing her mind on something else, sir.
I must find it. I must find it.
Oh, find what, my love? Tell me what it is, and I will order Rudolfo to help you find it.
But she is leaving, sir. Perhaps we should follow her to make certain she's all right?
I know what has happened. She is overcome with the thought of having won my affections, that she needs some time alone to contemplate it fully.
I do not believe that is what is happening here, sir.
As Nick Guy and I return to the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House, we pass Guston Griminoff, who is on his phone and on his way to practice the organ.
That is right. $1,000 on Peabody-Sherman fight. Bet on Mr. Peabody, of course. Me win big this time.
Just as he walked by, we noticed Christine Jornet roaming through the hallway. She was again in a trance-like state, and again she was diligently looking for something. We followed her as she walked into the sound booth.
All right, DeSoto, be careful as we go in. She can be surprisingly strong.
But before we could enter, we heard a now familiar sound.
Not again!
Going inside, we found Mr. Peavy lying on the floor covered in microphones, mic stands, and cables.
One minute I'm sweeping the floor, and the next minute, all this stuff comes falling on top of me.
Did Christine Journay do this?
Well, no, but I did see that person with the black cape and the mask that looks like a skull and the two beady little eyes. And I gotta say, he still smells terrible.
Are you all right?
You didn't sprain your wrist or bruise a rib or stub your toe, did you?
Not one of those things. All three! But don't worry about me. You need to go after that guy. You need to catch him. I'm tired of being pushed over or having things pushed over on me. Besides, as he was leaving, he kept saying, "I found it. I found it."
He found it? What did he find?
Well, how should I know, for land sakes? You're supposed to be the private eye. Go catch him and you'll find out what he found. He went that way, out through that side door.
Nick Guy and I quickly went after the supposed phantom of the ice opera. We saw him as he was making his way down a flight of stairs, and so we followed. When he reached the bottom, he turned and ran down another flight of stairs, which was followed by another and another.
This building sure goes down quite a ways.
When we reached the bottom of the final flight, we found ourselves standing before a wide underground river.
Look at that, DeSoto. That part of the story is true. There really is an underground river down here.
But what became of the man in the black cape? I don't see him anywhere.
Well, he must have crossed the river. See, there's a boat on the other side.
Oh, there's another boat here.
Well, let's get in and cross over.
With the sound of Guston Griminov's organ playing echoing through the building, we crossed over to the other side of the river and found a door up against the wall of the building. We entered into a room that was pitch black. All was quiet. Then, suddenly, a light was turned on. We found ourselves in a room with mirrored walls.
The room with mirrored walls! Well, that's true as well. Wait a second. Who's there?
Welcome to my lair, Nick Guy.
The Phantom of the Ice Opera, I presume?
Among other things, yes.
Well, your little game is about up.
My little game? No. I fear that you are the one whose little game is about up. Christine, my beautiful minion, subdue these two intruders.
Oui, monsieur.
To our surprise, Christine Journay came up from behind us and attacked us. And to our further surprise, she was incredibly strong and soon had us both pinned to the floor.
I don't understand it. She doesn't look like she would be this strong.
Oh, in her natural state, she isn't. But when she is under my spell, she is whoever I tell her she is, and she is capable of doing whatever I tell her she can do. Tie them up, Christine.
Oui, monsieur.
So, you must be Eric the Marvelous.
That's marvelous. Eric the Marvelous. It was those lousy printers.
You have Christine Journay under a hypnotic spell.
That is correct. On the night I left the circus, I did more than merely say goodbye to her. I hypnotized her. I thought having her in my power might be useful to me.
But to what end?
Well, it should be obvious, Nick Guy. Wait, no. Now that I think about it, it's not obvious. As you know, I worked for the Barkham and Bailiff Circus. I was much too great of a performer for such a small, insignificant circus like that. But I did not leave.
You told Christine that you felt strongly compelled to remain just where you were.
And that strong compulsion was because Mr. Barkham, one of the partners, was blackmailing me. He knew that I had conned a Malarkian prince in exile out of all of his nation's wealth, and he was in possession of my phone with all of the email evidence to prove it. He said if I left his two-bit circus, he would turn over my phone to the authorities.
But then you hypnotized Mr. Barkham's wife into thinking she was a chicken, and you couldn't break the spell, so he fired you.
And he also threatened to reveal my secret if I ever worked as a magician again. So not only was I out of a job, I was out of a profession. I knew I had to discover where he had hidden my phone and free myself from his power.
So how did you go about finding that out?
I learned the location of the farm Mrs. Barkham was living on and went out to see her. For a handful of Parker's premium poultry chow, that woman sang like a bird. Or rather, it clucked like a chicken. But all she was able to cluck out was that the phone was hidden here at the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House. And that's where Christine came in.
With her hypnotized, you had a reply for the job as assistant to the assistant prop manager. And then you unloosened the blades on Ostentatia Bland's skate so she would have an accident.
And through hypnotic suggestion, you convinced Christine that she was a world-class ice skater.
Yes, although it was no suggestion, it was a command.
Oui, monsieur.
And while Christine has been winning over the ice skating world, she has also been searching for my phone.
Well, it was a brilliant plan you had, Eric, the marvelous.
Marvelous! Marvelous!
But I'm afraid you've forgotten one thing.
What is that?
You should have hypnotically told Christine Jarnet that she was a world-class knot tire. As you can see, we've loosened the knots and are about to take you down.
I don't think so, Nick Guy. Christine, my beautiful minion, subdue them.
Oui, monsieur. I will obey. I will... Oh, what's going on? Nick Guy! Dr. DeSoto, where are we?
Oh, Guy, Christine Jornet has come out of a trance.
Well, you might as well give up, Eric the Marvelous.
Not so fast. Everyone, look deeply into my eyes. You're getting sleepy. 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 Sleepy.
Oh, Guy, look. Eric the Marvelous. He seems to be in a trance.
Well, he was looking at his own reflection in one of these mirrored walls, and he hypnotized himself.
I can't believe Eric the Marvelous used his skills for evil. Well, that was very bad.
Yes, ma'am. I've been a very bad magician.
Miss Jornet, Eric the Marvelous seems to be under your control.
Really? Eric the Marvelous, are you under my control? Will you obey me?
Yes, ma'am. I am in your power. I am yours to command.
According to Mr. Peavy, at his last encounter with the Phantom of the Ice Opera, he was saying, I found it! I found it!
Well, that must mean he found the phone with the incriminating evidence on it.
Miss Jornet, command him to give us the phone!
Of course, Nick Guy. All right, Eric the Marvelous, give me your phone.
I cannot, ma'am.
But you are in my power. You must obey me.
I cannot obey you, ma'am. I don't have my phone.
You don't have your phone?
Well, if he doesn't have it, then who was it that was saying, I found it, I found it?
I think I know. Come with me.
Nick Guy quickly led us out of the lower level of the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House and into the balcony and toward the organ loge. We arrived just as Guston Griminoff was leaving.
I see you pantomime's finally caught.
Well, you're half right.
What do you mean, Guy?
Eric the Marvelous did dress up as the Phantom of the Ice Opera, but he wasn't the only one.
Oh? Who was the other one, Nick Guy?
You're looking at him.
I am?
Do you mean that Guston Griminoff was impersonating the Phantom of the Ice Opera House as well?
Yes.
Is that how you say ridiculous, Nick Guy?
Guston Griminoff was also looking for Eric the Marvelous's phone.
And he's the one Mr. Peavy heard say, I found it, I found it.
But you're joking, Nick Guy. It could not be me. I was here practicing organ. You hear music, no?
Oh, we heard the organ music, yes, but you weren't playing it.
Of course, he had told us that he had all the music programmed to play by itself on a sequenced preset.
But how did you know he was using a preset, Nick Guy?
I heard the same mistake played at the same point in the song. He never corrected it. And if I'm not mistaken, he's got the phone right here in his pocket.
What are you doing? Wait. Not my pocket. Hey, how did Vaughn get in here?
But why was Guston Griminov searching for Eric's phone?
And how did he even know about its existence?
Well, you remember that he was the organist for the Barkham and Bailiff Circus. He must have overheard Eric the Marvelous and Barkham talking about it.
They're arguing one night. I heard everything about the Malarkey and Prince in Exile scam, and phone was the evidence. Heard Mr. Barkham threatening to expose what he knew.
Guston Griminov knew that Eric would be working to get that phone, so he kept a close eye on his whereabouts.
When Christine Journet started working at Ice Opera House, I knew Fawn must be here.
So he took the job as the organist.
The previous organist had been here for 20 years and showed no indication he would suddenly quit.
I told him that I had heard previous assistant to the assistant prop manager was going to marry a Malarkey and Prince in Exile, and they would need an organist for the ceremony. Told him Malarkey and Prince in Exile will pay a lot of money for organist.
But why did you want to find Eric's phone?
To do just what Barkham was doing. Blackmail.
Guston Griminov wanted to blackmail Eric the Marvelous because of his gambling debts. He likes to gamble, but he's not very good at it.
All I need is one big win. Then all my trouble be over. Now you ruin everything.
That's right.
Just then, Guston Griminov pulled down a curtain on top of us, sending us all to the ground. While we struggled to untangle ourselves, Guston Griminov was getting away.
We've got to catch him!
Oh, Eric!
Yes, ma'am.
You will do as I say. You are the fastest runner in the world. You will chase after Griminov, and you will catch him. And when you do, you are also the strongest man in the world. You will subdue him and hold him for me.
Yes, ma'am. I will obey.
In an instant, Eric the Marvelous was on his feet and chasing after Guston Griminov. He quickly caught him and forced him to the ground, and did indeed hold him long enough for us to take him into custody. Eric the Marvelous would be brought to justice for scamming the Malarkey and Prince in Exile.
All right, Monsieur Eric. Tell them that you're guilty and deserve to be punished.
Yes, ma'am. I am guilty and deserve to be punished.
Guston Griminov would be charged with trying to cause a public disturbance.
All right, Mr. Griminov. Tell them you're guilty and deserve to be punished.
Yes, ma'am. I am being guilty and deserving to be... Wait! You don't have me hypnotized!
For her part, Christine Journet discovered that one of the consequences of being free from Eric the Marvelous's hypnotic spell is that she lost her excellent skating abilities.
It is well worth the price for my freedom.
Upon receiving this news, Ramen Spaghetto, with his manservant Rudolfo, spoke to Miss Journet.
Well, Christine, this news changes everything. You find that you are no longer able to skate, and I find that I am no longer in love with you. Therefore, my offer of marriage is off the table. Perhaps my manservant Rudolfo can explain it to you.
Yes, sir. Miss Journet, it appears that what Master Spaghetto interpreted as love for you was merely an infatuation with your skating.
I don't suppose that matters much anyway, Ramen. You see, I could never marry a man who does not share my strong convictions concerning the Christian faith. A man who doesn't value the work of Jesus on the cross.
I understand that. You think I didn't understand that?
You understand it?
You do, sir.
Certainly. You feel compelled to come up with some spurious reason to not want to marry me so as to assuage the pain of being jilted by such a wealthy man of high pedigree and outstanding characteristics such as I. Explain that to her, Rodolfo.
Of course, sir. Miss Journet, Master Spaghetto is a very shallow man and is not fit to be the object of your affections. Your rejection of him displays a great deal of wisdom on your part.
That doesn't sound like how I phrased it.
And, Miss Journet, if I may be so bold as to speak on my own behalf, I would be very honored if you would accept an invitation to dine with me this evening.
Oh, oui, Rudolfo. I would like that. I would like that very much.
Nick Guy and the Phantom of the Ice Opera Affair was written and produced by Frank Uhle with Rebecca Bradford and features the vocal talents of John and Rebecca Bradford, Ethan Maynard, and Frank Uhle. We'll find out more about this topic or the Nick Guy Private Eye Apologetic Series, visit our website at nickguy.net and discover that sometimes the most amazing things must be true.